Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to 1A. We'd like to better understand who's listening and how you're using podcasts. Please help us out by completing a short anonymous survey at npr.org/podcastsurvey. That's one word. It takes less than 10 minutes, and it really helps support the show. That's npr.org/podcastsurvey. One word. Thanks so much, and enjoy the show. This is 1A. I'm Sarah McCammon. We've already begun to see the devastating economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic. More than 26 million Americans have lost their jobs or been furloughed, and businesses across the country have shut their doors indefinitely. It's the younger generations, however, millennials and Generation Z, who will likely bear the greatest financial brunt of this. Many millennials entered a workforce that hadn't yet recovered from the 2008 recession, and now they're being hit hard again by the pandemic.
Hello, my name is Josh. I'm from Medford, Oregon. During the 2008 financial crisis, I was graduating from college with a degree in liberal arts and music. For the next several years after that, I kind of struggled and didn't really know what to do. So I made a pivot into healthcare, and it's been very interesting to see how that's played out as well.
Hello, my name is Ari. I'm from Chicago. I'm a millennial. I'm 31 years old. It's made me really definitely take a look at the fact that I need to pick up a trade. I can't go through something like this again and not have work. So I've made the decision to get my electrical license.
Hi, I'm Danielle. I think that during the 2008 crisis, the millennial generation had a hard time getting off the ground. They couldn't find jobs. You know, we had a high amount of student loan debt, and now the current COVID-19 crisis. It just feels like we can't get ahead. It feels like, and I hate to say this, but it feels like we're going to be the lost generation.
Thank you, Josh, Ari, and Danielle, for leaving us those voicemails. The consequences of young Americans facing yet another economic crisis will affect generations to come, and the repercussions won't just be financial. Joining us now from Oakland, California, is Annie Lowry, staff writer at The Atlantic, focusing on economic policy. Annie, welcome back to 1A.
Thanks so much for having me.
And joining us from Austin, Texas, is Kara Perez, a personal finance expert and founder of Bravely, a financial education company. Kara, welcome back.
Excited to be here.
Excited to have you. And Annie, I want to start with you because you've written about this phenomenon, of course. Why are millennials being hit especially hard, at least financially, by the pandemic? What makes them more vulnerable than other groups?
I would point to a few things. So the first is that they graduated into the Great Recession. And we know we have many, many economic studies showing that graduating into a recession doesn't just disadvantage you during the time of the recession. It actually has a lifetime depressant effect on your earnings. So you usually take something like a 10% cohort hit to earnings at first. But even 20 years later, your entire generation is still earning about 2% less. So that's one thing happening. The second is that at least for right now, the job losses are concentrated among the young. So more than half of workers under 45 have lost a job, been put on leave, or had their hours reduced to the because of the pandemic. And that's compared with about a quarter of people over the age of 45. And the third thing is that the millennials as a generation were much more economically vulnerable coming into this than Gen X, for instance, was going into the Great Recession. They'd had no chance to build any kind of cushion of wealth. They're about 8 percentage points less likely than that older generation to own a home, which can be quite financially protective. They had very little money in savings accounts or investment accounts, and that's largely because of the economy writ large, not because of choices that millennials made.
And we will come back to that idea, Annie. Just remind us, as sort of a scene setter here, what millennials are, because these terms get thrown around a lot. But what age range are we talking about?
Roughly speaking, about 22, 23 to just below 40 at this point.
And I want to say that all three of us in this conversation are millennials, although I'm an old one, I'll tell you that. But Annie, also we're talking about Gen Z, a little bit younger cohort. Remind us who they are and what they're facing.
Yeah, so these are kind of the millennials' younger siblings a little bit. So this is folks who are just now graduating. It's folks in their teens and very early 20s at this point.
And Kara, you are a financial educator. Talk to us about some of the specific ways that young adults are going to be affected financially by this pandemic. What kinds of on-the-ground impacts are we going to see?
Certainly, this will impact millennial and Gen Z's ability to invest and start building that longer-term wealth. A huge problem that we've all talked about ad nauseum is the student loan crisis, and that's not going anywhere. People are still graduating with tons of debt. Debt feels much more important to pay off because you can't skip those payments. And we tell ourselves, I'll invest later, I'll get to that. And then we miss perhaps decades of investing. So I'd say that's going to be a huge impact of this pandemic. But also a very big thing is earning power. And this is something I myself have experienced as a millennial. When I graduated in 2011, there were not a lot of high-paying jobs who were really entering the gig economy, and a lot of benefits had been slashed. And we've seen that trend continue. So now we have a new generation graduating, or millennials who are just beginning to reach years where they're finally stabilizing, and the pandemic has come and kind of delivered a gut punch to us all.
And Kara, as you mentioned, you're a millennial. You've experienced this firsthand. You've said that you don't have the safety net of wealthy parents. What are your plans to get through this? How are you softening the blow yourself, if you don't mind my asking?
Absolutely. Something that I focused on really heavily in the last year was building 1 year of cash reserves. So actually in February 2020, I hit 1 year of living expenses in cash savings, which is a goal I'd worked on for 3 years. It didn't happen overnight, but that provides me an immense amount of comfort. I would also say I have 8 streams of income in my business, and that also gives me a lot. A lot is maybe strong, but it gives me some flexibility. If one stream doesn't perform, I have 7 others to hopefully bring something in.
Annie Lowry, I want to go back to you. You're also a millennial who graduated from college right around the 2008 recession, I believe. What were things for you? How were things then? And how is this economic crisis different?
Yeah, I've been pretty lucky myself to, despite being in an industry that's very unstable, to have mostly worked through the last recession, and at least for now to be in a job that's stable. But that's not true for a lot of people in my cohort. And it was something I thought about a lot, right? Whether journalism was going to be viable as a career. And I just feel very, very lucky. And I think it's probably nothing more than stupid luck that I managed to get jobs that ended up being at least somewhat stable. But that just wasn't true for a lot of other folks in my cohort who've had to do things like take on a lot of student loan debt, or have had to work multiple jobs, have had to stay in their parents' house for longer because they couldn't afford to move out, have had to keep renting, or have had to move to a distant suburb because that's where they could afford. And so I think that you see millennials making a lot of strained financial decisions because they just haven't had the earnings trajectory of older generations. They haven't been able to build wealth. And I think, you know, a really important strand of this that was brought up is that they are servicing more than $500 billion of student loan debt that has not had the promised effect of supercharging their earnings and helping them build nest eggs. So it's just it's a tough set of circumstances that folks our age have faced.
I think it's interesting, Annie, that you raised this question of, is journalism a viable career, which is something I think many of us have asked ourselves, and certainly other people in sort of creative fields ask themselves. And I think it raises a question about class and economic inequality, right? Because who are the people that are, some people are more and less poised to take those kinds of risks with their careers, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that there's a whole series of jobs that functionally you can't get into when you're younger unless you have some kind of safety net or some sort of leg up. So there's this question of just representationally who is capable of doing that kind of more risky and creative work. You can also see that same effect in terms of who among the millennials gets to be an entrepreneur, because you often need some kind of safety net for that. It's a very risky thing to do. Who among the millennials has the economic wherewithal to start businesses. And this isn't just about whether millennials themselves are capable of fulfilling the potential that they feel that they have for themselves. It's about the whole economy, right? Are we able to get people to those jobs where they could be most brilliant, most creative? This has an effect on the whole economy's growth path. It really, really does. This isn't good for anybody for a generation to be hobbled like this.
And how does that scan, Annie, along racial lines? I mean, if millennials are badly off, it's worse for millennials of color, right? I think we might have lost Annie's line, but we will come back to her in just a second. Kara, I don't know if you can weigh in on that. I mean, how does your economic advice, how do you think about how race and class come into these questions for people?
This is a huge part of what I do with my company. We try to take an intersectional lens to personal finance and to the economic outlook. And so we know, for example, Latinas make 54 cents to the dollar of a white man. We know that Black women make about 64 cents to the dollar of a white man. And when we have situations of financial crisis, these become expounded. We know that if you're earning less, you are less able to build a financial safety cushion for yourself. And if, for example, Latinas are much more likely to be hourly workers who have been much more impacted in this than someone who has a white-collar job. So all of these things kind of ripple out. And I thought Annie's point about how this one generation being hobbled is not good for anyone and it's not good for the overall economy, I completely agree. And it's not good for the future. We really have to be asking ourselves, what are millennials going to be able to hand down to their children? Are we going to be able to hand down wealth or ability the way that some millennials' parents have been able to? Or are most of us going to say, sorry, kid, you know, I wasn't able to take those steps early enough to build assets that I can give to you. And now we have to think about millennials' children and what they're going to be facing.
I want to go now to some listener comments. We're hearing about a lot of these challenges from our listeners. One listener texted us, I have two children graduating from college this year. My son is leaving school $80,000 in debt. His loan was made through our credit union, and they've told him he must begin to pay as there is no financial relief from private lenders. He has no job prospects. He's currently living at home and working at Lowe's for some income. He's very uncertain about where his life will go from here and how he's going to repay the debt. My husband and I are helping him to the best of our ability, but are limited ourselves. And I actually want to play a voicemail from a listener that touches on a really similar concern. We got this one from Suzanne from Virginia, the mother of two millennial sons, who's also worried about their financial situation in this pandemic.
I'm the mother of two sons who are both millennials. My older son and his bride bought a house 2 years ago, and her family and we contributed $80,000 towards the down payment. They fully expect to lose their jobs and the house to foreclosure. I'm absolutely heartbroken for them and for the hundreds of thousands of other millennials who are going to lose everything in this financial collapse. It will take us years to get out of the hole that we are in.
Thank you, Suzanne, for sharing your story and your son's story with us. And Annie Lowry, we've got you back. I want to go back to you. We're hearing these stories about concerns about mortgages, about student loans, the kinds of obligations that are just, you know, life things that everybody has to deal with. But for millennials, so often those responsibilities are really hard to meet. What is the long-term impact of this?
So I think that the long-term impact will be to continue to delay the millennials' ability to buy homes, start businesses, and have children, all of which are things that they, by and large, want to do, or many of them would like to do, and they feel financially incapable of doing that. I think that as the millennials get older, you're also going to see these kind of deeper signs of economic strain. Will they have to work longer? Will they have to hold more part-time jobs and gig jobs just to kind of keep their heads afloat? Will they have to switch jobs more often because they feel like they have to in order to make more money? And so we're already seeing them more fragile than older cohorts were at the same age. And that's going to profoundly affect their economic decision-making going forward.
And I want to read a tweet from a listener. Madeline said, I graduated college in 2009. This current crisis feels a lot like it did in 2008, 2009. I feel like we millennials are at a constant disadvantage financially. We're a talented workforce, but we can't seem to catch a break. Another listener texted, my husband and I are millennials. Our biggest concern is the long-term goals we have, like paying off my student loans and buying a house, as you were just saying, Annie. As of this week, they say, we're both sick. My husband is in the restaurant industry, and we're assuming it's COVID-19 because of our symptoms. My frustration is that it feels like we're responsible, we work hard, but we can't get ahead to have some stability. And I go on to talk about the challenges of raising children, affording children in a situation like this. I mean, this is a question too. You know, so often, Annie and Kara, millennials are talked about like we're, you know, just out of college, but we're not, right? I mean, many of us are nearing 40, and or the oldest of us are, and there are real life responsibilities. And Kara, you touched on this just a moment ago. What does it mean for the next generation, for children of millennials who have, as we've heard, just struggled, whose parents have struggled to get a leg up?
You know, I think about my own experience, which is certainly, I came from a low-income background, not destitute, not poor. I would never say that. But the reality was when I graduated, similar to the listener who wrote in and said that her son is now living at home, working at Lowe's, I lived at home for the first year. My mother was not able to say, hey, here's $1,500 a month to go start your life in New York or something. I waited tables for the first 3 years out of college, and it was a slow start. I didn't start investing until I was 27. I think that we will see a lot of that in millennials' children. It's impossible to predict, and hopefully we'll be able to turn it around as a generation. But what millennials are facing is really a cocktail of challenges. There's the rising cost of living, there is student loan debt, there is low wages, and there is the housing crisis. All of these together, maybe we could take on one problem at a time, but all of these together mean that they take years, possibly decades, to get over. And that will really ripple down into what we are able to pass on to our children.
And in a moment, we're going to talk a little bit more about maybe some of the policy solutions to this problem, where this could go, and more about what it means for both millennials and Gen Zers as a generation and individually. We'll talk more to Kara about how she advises people to make decisions individually. That was Kara Perez, founder of Bravely, a financial education company, also talking to Annie Lowry, staff writer at The Atlantic. We'll have more from our guests and from you in a moment. I'm Sarah McCammon. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor LegalZoom. LegalZoom makes it easy for Americans to set up their estate plans without leaving their homes. Don't know the difference between a last will or living trust? What about an advance healthcare directive? LegalZoom can help. They're not a law firm, but you can get started quickly online and also get advice through their network of independent attorneys. Learn more about estate plans and how you can speak to an attorney for advice at LegalZoom.com.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
The biggest story in the world is a science story. And keeping up with all the latest coronavirus research, it's a lot. So on Shortwave, we translate the science you need to know into short daily episodes. Listen and subscribe to Shortwave from NPR.
Millennials and Generation Z could bear the brunt of the economic devastation brought on by the pandemic. For a group that's already strapped with student loan debt, living through rising housing costs, and facing down a climate crisis, this moment could prove to be crippling. We've been talking with Annie Lowry, staff writer at The Atlantic, and Kara Perez, founder of Bravely, a financial education company. And I want to read a tweet from one of our listeners because I think it kind of goes to something I really want to talk about. This listener says, the generation gap nonsense is divisive and misleading. Boomers suffered our entire working lives with stagnant wages, soaring costs, debt, and recessions. And Annie, I want to ask you about that. I mean, is there value in comparing generations, and how well can you even make comparisons?
Yeah, I think that there absolutely is value in comparing generations, because generations, they do go through these macroeconomic events together, and we know that recessions have different effects on the young than they do on the old. I would note that when you're looking at this kind of question of whether the millennials can make up the lost ground that they would have to make up to end up in the same financial position as the baby boomers or the Gen Xers, you know, that's a policy question as well as it's a personal economic financial decision-making question. Again, this isn't necessarily something the millennials did so much as it was about what they inherited. And I think that there are a lot of solutions, collective political solutions that could tackle this problem, which I think is an interesting part of this, right? To what extent do we want to address these problems?
Yeah. And, you know, the country is going to be running a major deficit to pay for some of these relief bills and stimulus packages that have been brought on by the pandemic, which raises a lot of policy questions for the long term. Will there be money to do big things to address the challenges of millennials and Gen Z? Or is this just another burden that's going to fall on the younger generation?
Yeah, certainly right now, the country needs a huge amount of deficit spending. The government is basically the economy while these shelter-in-place orders are here, and we need a huge surge of money for our medical infrastructure. But there's this question of who's going to pay for it. The one thing I would note is that we're in a recession right now where growth has fallen off a cliff. The unemployment rate is probably about 20%. And so all of that deficit spending that we're doing right now is going to be generating more economic activity to get us out of this hole, which isn't to say that it pays for it, but it's a good deal given how low borrowing costs are at the moment. And there are probably structural issues that we could fix that don't just have to do with the pandemic that would be a good investment at this point now, too.
Kara, you do a lot of work on personal finance, but as you think about the big picture, are there policy changes you would like to see going forward to help these younger generations bounce back from not only this pandemic, but the financial crisis of 2008 and so on?
Yeah, I strongly believe in a social safety net, and I would like to see the United States expand its existing social safety net. I'd love to see changes to the tax code, and I would really love to see changes to how we approach parenting and childcare in the United States. This is a huge issue and has been a huge issue for many generations. We penalize women for getting pregnant. You can still be fired for getting pregnant in certain places in the United States. And it's absolutely outrageous. It's also really not only expensive to have a child, but does impact parents' earning, especially mothers' earning. We know there is a motherhood penalty. I think a lot of these could be changed by policy changes rather than saying, hey, it's on you to figure this out, moms.
I want to read a comment from a listener, Nina. She says, at 36, this is business as usual. I graduated in 2008 with a health science degree. It's been find what you can, work where you can ever since then. Now I have 3 part-time jobs, none in health science. One is Instacart, and I'm grateful. And really, my profession is hustling. Annie, are more millennials and Gen Zers in this gig economy that we hear so much about?
Yeah, so the big gig economy is big and it's diverse. However, it does absolutely provide really important financial and economic streams for younger workers. And I would even say that leaving aside the kind of Uber and gig jobs, the TaskRabbit type jobs, millennials are likely to be in positions where they are contract workers without benefits much more broadly. And that has a huge economic impact in their lives, because it makes them less likely to have employer-sponsored health insurance or things like 401ks that would help them save.
And I want to play another comment from listener Jenny in North Carolina. We got a voicemail from, this is another mother of a college student in this case, so I guess that would be a Gen Zer, whose post-graduation plans have been completely upended by the pandemic.
I am the mother of a graduating senior from George Washington University. She has lost the job that she has had all year and was hoping to use to transition through the summer to a Peace Corps position that she was supposed to deploy for in September. That position has been postponed indefinitely. The stimulus has not helped kids of this age. We were not given a $500 check for her, even though she is a dependent. We are helping as much as we can to support her. But the truth is that we have gone into debt trying to keep her from going into an enormous amount of debt.
Thank you, Jenny, for leaving us that voicemail. And Kara, something that's going to have a major impact on Generation Z and college and grad students right now is the cancellation of internships. The internship experience is often now required to get a job after college. It's a crucial stepping stone for so many young people. What happens now without it?
That is an excellent question. And I think, luckily, Gen Z grew up with the internet, and there is this sense of, I can put myself on the internet. I can create something of my own. We see a lot of that via social media, but a lot of that via, I'm going to start a blog, I'm going to make my own videos on YouTube. I do believe that that is an opportunity. It's not the same opportunity, but it's how many people can get started. You want to be a filmmaker, you want to be a healthcare worker, you can create a channel for yourself on the internet somewhere where you do grow your skills, grow your expertise, and kind of create your own world. And you can levy that into a position at an established company.
But I think, you know, some people might say if the answer for these young people is just hustling, as Nina described what she does a few moments ago, if it's getting these gigs that don't offer any security or insurance or long-term benefits, what does that say about our system? And Annie, I want to ask you, this financial fragility that we are coming face-to-face with in the midst of this pandemic, what does it say about how well our economy was working before this?
Yeah, it doesn't say a lot of great things about how well it was working. We were in a very high inequality in economy where it was very, very hard for the bottom 80% to get ahead. And I think, you know, these are some of the programs that Kara was gesturing to, but things like student debt loan forgiveness initiatives, a true 0-5 plan to help kids, help parents make sure that they have childcare and preschool for their kids. Universal pre-K, actually expanding health insurance and making it so that when you lose your job, you don't also lose your insurance and you don't have to pay through the nose to continue it. All of these things would help millennials, in some cases disproportionately, because they're dealing with the financial fragility of having to figure all of those things out on their own.
Well, we have to take a break, but we'll have more with Annie Lowry of The Atlantic and Kara Perez of Bravely right after this. Stay close. This is 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as isolation, depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment when you need professional help. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit betterhelp.com/1A to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
The world is in a dark place. Find a light with NPR's Hidden Brain. Stories and long-form interviews to brave uncertain times. Insights to understand yourself. Hidden Brain. Listen and subscribe.
This is 1A. We're talking about how millennials are dealing with the economic fallout from COVID-19. And we have a little pushback here from a listener. Jason writes on our Facebook page, "This is nonsense. There's a large percentage of millennials that are crushing it and will get through COVID-19 just fine. The need to appeal to others on social media with $400 sneakers, $8 coffee, posted on a $900 phone on Instagram." Okay, so that brings us to a question. We're talking about trends here, right? We're talking about aggregate numbers. Not everybody in the millennial and Gen Z generation is struggling. Kara, who's doing well?
That's a great question. There are plenty of millennials absolutely crushing it. This commenter's right. Certainly millennials are not a monolith. People who are doing well are in large part people who had flexibility earlier in their lives. So immediately after graduation, hey, I'm, you know, grandma writes me a check for $15,000, I'm able to buy a house for that. Or I was able to get a job where my starting salary was $80,000 a year and it has gone up over time. There are plenty of success stories out there, absolutely. And those millennials are doing a service to the rest of us in a lot of ways with helping change some of these numbers on the upswing. However, we also know, going back to a bigger picture level here, millennials on average make 20% less than our parents made when they were the same age. So there really is less money and, to an extent, less opportunity floating around, generationally speaking.
And Kara, I want to go back to you because, again, we are talking about the big picture here, the aggregate, but there are things individuals can do to, I guess, at least mitigate a tough situation. What are you telling younger clients right now about how to handle their money and lessen this blow, especially if they've lost a job or they don't have a lot of income coming in right now?
Yeah, I mean, as we've really pointed out on this show, there are a lot of things at play here. And big picture, we do need policy change to really rescue some of the younger generation. That said, I always believe there are individual actions we can take, and sometimes they're not glamorous. I worked 5 part-time jobs to pay off my student loan debt. I was a lacrosse coach. I drove a van. I catered. It wasn't glamorous, and I don't mean to spout the hustle doctrine, but I do think when your back is up against a wall, you do what you can. So I've been telling everyone, try and think of this as an exercise in creativity. What can you do? What is adjacent to what you can do that can bring in money? If you're a photographer and you can't get within 6 feet of your clients right now, what are other things you can offer to a client? Editing services or something along those lines. It really is the time to think broadly about how can I make money?
And Annie, we touched on this policy, political question a moment ago, but I want to talk more about that. I mean, again, this pandemic has shed light on the lack of safety nets in this country. And as you know, there's already been a growing interest among a lot of the younger voters, millennials and Gen Zers, in movements like democratic socialism, embodied by people like Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Bernie Sanders. Do you think this pandemic gives those movements further momentum?
Absolutely. This recession has laid bare how difficult it was for young families, how hard it is for young workers coming into the workforce. And it's also exposed that the United States is unique among OECD countries in having very few public goods, in having very little social insurance, in not covering everybody with affordable health care. And I think that there's already been a leftward march on the left that has been driven by young people. And I imagine that this is accelerating that. And I think it's all a question of, you know, whether the millennials can get out there and vote, because we're in a very politicized and polarized economic political environment as well.
And Kara, I want to ask you a little bit about the emotional repercussions of all of this. We've talked about the financial consequences, but what does this mean for millennials and Zoomers emotionally, in terms of, you know, their psychological health, their mental health, losing jobs, moving back in with their parents, that sort of thing?
You know, there's a Kanye West quote that I think speaks nicely to this, which is, having money is not everything, not having it is. And this is something that I just spoke about with my audience. Not having money, or not having the options that come with money, kind of necessitates a certain level of financial anxiety. Now you're constantly thinking, how am I going to pay this bill? How am I going to provide for my children? And this undercurrent of financial anxiety can grow depending on the circumstances that you're in. Americans commonly cite money as one of their top 2 biggest stressors. I think that the mental impact of this really cannot be ignored. It's a huge, emotions and mental health are a huge part of money and money behavior. It's something I do a lot with my clients. How do we feel about our money? So something that I would say to everyone is, you're allowed to feel some type of way about what's going on. Absolutely. I think the...
Do you have any...
We'll see in turn.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask if you have any last bits of advice for people as they're, you know, whatever situation they're in right now, as they're looking ahead to the future, especially younger listeners.
Yeah, I think talk about it with the people in your life. Talk about it with your friends, your parents. Don't be afraid. Don't try and keep money to yourself. Share your circumstances and your feelings and get the support that you need.
Well, that's Kara Perez, the founder of Bravely, a financial education company. Kara, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Annie Lowry, staff writer with The Atlantic. Thank you, Annie.
Thanks for having me.
Good to talk with you. And before we go, for weeks now, we've been making time at the end of every show for your acts of kindness, a little bright spot during this dark time. Today's story comes from Martha in South Bend, Indiana.
My neighbors, Christine and Mike, were absolutely amazing. I broke my ankle on April 1st. They were not home. The ambulance took me to the hospital. Christine picked me up and brought me home. They brought over a trundle bed because I sleep upstairs. They got me all set up. Christine came over every morning with coffee, made sure I had breakfast until my friends who were quarantined could get here to offer the support I needed. Christine and Mike had never been in my house before. They helped me do the dishes. Christine helped me do the dishes. They moved furniture to make it possible. I just really am so clear that COVID is bringing out the best in us, loving and caring for each other. And it was a huge act of kindness. I couldn't have gotten through this without them.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, Martha. We hope you're feeling better. We're glad you had some support. If you have an act of kindness to share, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 855-236-1212. We read and listen to all of them. That number again, 855-236-1212. This conversation was produced by Haley Blassingame and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Sarah McCammon. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.